Welcome to the Encode Decode podcast, Hacker Defense Against the Dark Arts, with your host, Wolf Korlick, brought to you by CBI IT Risk Management.
Hello, welcome to Encode Decode, a new podcast in IT security. I'm your host, Wolf Korlick, and what we're looking at in Encode Decode is the defenders, right? The people on the front lines, the people who are making a difference. We hear every day, that the criminal hackers only have to be right once, and that we have to be right every single time. We hear every single day about breach after breach after breach. But the reality is that there's people on the front lines, there's organizations, institutions, and people who are keeping the criminal element out, who are doing fantastic things in the Detroit area, in the Michigan area, and across the country. And those are the folks that we're going to have on Encode Decode to share what they're doing and how they approach IT security. With that, I'm very excited to introduce our guest, Christian Kopassi. Christian is the Chief Security Officer and Deputy Director for the State of Michigan. How's it going, Christian?
Great. Well, very glad to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you on, you know, and that's a big job taking on the State of Michigan. And you're pretty new to the role too, right?
Correct. I've actually only been here 2.5 months, so I'm just about done drinking through the fire hose, hopefully.
Oh, geez. You're off to have that new paint smell then.
That's right.
Fantastic. So what are some of the initiatives you're working on? What's your top thing right now?
One of the things that we are just about to release is our cyber security disruption response plan. What this is it's basically a process by in which how the state will react to a state of emergency or a cyber threat incident for the state. The great thing that we've been able to do, though, is kind of while we looked at the state of Michigan and local government, we also included private and public sector as well. So pretty much every industry in the state of Michigan had a chance to kind of give their opinions on it, what would work for them. So it's a great living document that can be used by anyone, regardless of private or public, what industry, doesn't matter. And they can kind of tailor it to their own need. Almost gives you a step-by-step. If this happens, this is what your processes, your policies say you should do. These are your communication lines. At this level of event, who should you be calling? What is, as chief security officer, as CIO, as CTO, whatever different roles you have, what should you be doing?
So it's effectively instant response, but statewide, coordinated, and a document that organizations that perhaps don't have instant response today could pull down and tailor for their needs.
Exactly. I mean, everyone, you keep hearing about, we have a plan, we have a document, nobody knows who has it. The last time, if you actually look at it, the last edit date is, 5 years ago, probably still says draft. And, Mike Tyson's famous for saying, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. When you get the FBI, law enforcement, or some other people are notifying you of an incident, that's not the time where you want to be trying to find a piece of paper or an online document saying, hey, what do I do now?
Yes, you got to have your plan in place. You got to have it understood, communicated. I like that Mike Tyson quote, right? Everyone has a plan until you're punched in the face.
And the biggest thing, again, is, the actual testing. We just ran a tabletop exercise with the state of Michigan a couple weeks ago, and that's actually where we kind of unveiled the cyber disruption response plan and actually, went through it for each of the scenarios, and it worked great. The disruption plan actually came out a few years ago. It was actually at the time was called the cyber disruption response strategy, and it was very geared to strictly the Department of Technology Management and Budget, basically the IT department for the state of Michigan. So in its new, persona, it's been reworked to include, the entire state.
Phenomenal. Now, you mentioned tabletop exercises. So for our listeners, what is a tabletop exercise and what were some of those scenarios you ran people through?
Yeah, a tabletop is, pretty much just like it sounds, but, you basically have key stakeholders, sitting around a table and it depends on the type you do. Some of them, are facilitated. So you basically show up to a room and you really don't have any idea of what's going to happen. And you're just, scenarios are talked about like, hey, it's 9 a.m. You get a call from the FBI saying you have indicators that your data has been put on a, pay spin or something like that. Or it could be something where it's a little bit smaller, where it's something, your IT department or your CEO, you know, some point of leadership in your organization just says, hey, let's sit together and talk about, hey, if we get a really bad incident where, you know, production's affected or, you know, the public is going to be aware, this is what our plan is. Let's actually go through it to figure out, you know, what gaps we have. Like I said, the plan is great, but until you actually go through it and use it, you don't really know how effective it is. And again, you don't want to be finding that out at the time of an incident.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, FBI is knocking at the door. What is our response? Who coordinates with the FBI? Who coordinates internally? I'm imagining like who is communicating with the media. There's a disclosure that has to happen depending if it's payment data or health data.
Correct. And the biggest thing, you know, I think we've learned from all the breaches as Brian Krebs, if he's the first to report the breach, you know, you haven't done your job.
I saw there's people running t-shirts around that says Brian Krebs is my instant reporting.
I mean, he does a great job, but yeah, that's not where you want to hear about it from.
You don't want to hear it from Brian Krebs. You know, you want to hear it from your users or from people who are on the front lines. And that gets me to another thing I wanted to ask you about. So you've had a long and distinguished career, of course, been at banks and energy companies and what have you. And can you talk to me a little bit about the awareness programs you've built?
Yeah, sure. Probably one of the first great successes I had was at Chemical Bank. Very typical organization as far as, you know, we had annual security awareness training. Kind of we thought we were doing a good job of it. You know, we had a very high adherence to, you know, 95, 100% completion normally of the training awareness. But, you know, when we actually got to sit down with our employees, you know, they weren't happy. You know, the information was pretty static. It took them like 2 hours at the end of the year. So everyone's trying to go on vacation and they have to, you know, sit around for extra time to get this done. So one of the things that we started to do in addition to the awareness training, one, we broke it down into different modules. That way, you know, there was a little bit of security awareness going out each month, 10 to 15 minute chunks. It's much more easier for an employee to complete, as well as it keeps it, you know, on their mind. It was every month, you know, they had to either complete a new topic, or there was also just, you know, awareness campaigns coming from my group as well. So just, you know, certain topics that would we think that the employees would want to know about that they may not have heard on the news, and really more how it affected them. So what we ended up doing is, this took, oh geez, over a year to complete. We had 160 branches, and what we did is we basically partnered with our loss prevention team and went to every branch and gave, you know, everyone basically like a 30-minute presentation on physical security, loss prevention type risks, as well as the cyber side. Not only what they need to do to, I guess, have good cyber hygiene at the bank, but more importantly as well is how they could use it in their everyday lives at home. So, you know, the biggest thing was like social media security. You know, be wary of, you know, what information you are putting out there, your family, your friends. You know, how are you protecting yourself online? You know, do you just have a, you know, a password they use on all eight of your sites? So if one's compromised, you know, they have access to everything. What are your security questions? You know, if your answers are something that can be gained from your Facebook page, as far as my dog's name is Fluffy and all you do is post pictures of you and Fluffy all day, you know, not the best security. So, and that was great. And the biggest thing in that was really just the one-on-one time we got to actually have the employees. So, I mean, it was pretty much just we left like 15 to 20 minutes and just let them, you know, hammer away and ask us questions. And majority of them weren't work-related, which was great because it was really, you know, hey, I understand, you know, kind of my responsibilities at work. What I don't understand is, you know, all this stuff, everyone keeps mentioning cloud, you know, I'm signing up for new apps and, you know, really where is my risk? You know, what should I be concerned with? Because for the most part, a lot of times people are just doing things without really thinking of the ramifications that will hold for them in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings up a very interesting point, right? I mean, you've effectively shifted the awareness program from here, let me tell you how to do your job and protect the organization, to saying, hey, here's what's really going on online and let me help you protect yourself.
Right. I think what we were able to do is give them some good just cyber practice of, you know, things that they should do and relate it more to the things they do more often that they may care about more than their jobs, you know, obviously with Facebook, and then kind of just instill in them, you know, some best practices that once they get that in their head, they kind of associate that, oh, well, I'm doing this now. And now when I go back to work, I kind of get it more. And I kind of have, I see how it relates to me where before I really didn't.
That makes a lot of sense because then it's top of mind. And that makes me wonder too, did you start to see more reporting? Hey, this looks suspicious. I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, it was almost overwhelming. Just the amount of things that people started reporting that they hadn't done before. So, I mean, the actual increase, it was almost like 75% to 100% increase. I mean, it was crazy where we were just almost getting inundated. I said, you know, what we think of people, the front line is, you know, just like an IDS, if you don't tune it right, you're going to get a lot of false positives and you're going to get alert fatigue. So educating our employees was basically us tuning them. And we kind of got them to say, okay, well, this is suspicious. I want to report this versus, well, this is just email that I got because I signed up for, you know, an account somewhere. So that was a really big a win for us to kind of really differentiate between what is just spam that is, you know, pretty harmless versus what is malicious. And on that, what we also started doing was quarterly phishing tests against the employees as well, because again, it's great to have all the awareness in the world, but until you actually start testing, you really have no clue on how effective it is besides how many people are participating. That was a lot of fun. You know, the first couple times we had some angry people, they thought, you know, this was targeted towards them or we were, you know, out to get them. And just again, through our awareness program, talking about, you know, what we're trying to do and what our efforts are. And this is why they're like, oh, okay, I get it. I would fall for this. So thank you for bringing this into my attention. And really, what should I be looking for? I think there's a lot of myths out there that, you know, phishing emails are poorly written emails that are very easy to spot. And unfortunately, even the ones that are, people are still falling for them. So getting an actual very well crafted email that goes to them that is purported to be from our department about something timely as far as, you know, taxes or raises, they're going to click on that attachment 99% of the time.
Oh, absolutely. They will. Absolutely. I like that metaphor too, right? So if our people are our frontline intrusion detection system, then our awareness program is tuning. Phishing, those types of things, is testing. Mm-hmm. And of course, the ultimate metric is the accurate intel that gets over to the Security Operations Center, right? The SOC.
Right.
Which makes me wonder, in terms of the awareness programs, feeding into the SOC and whatnot, have you done anything interesting at the Security Operations Center layer, right, to help tune that and get that to be responsive?
Yeah, and I think there's been a huge shift in the past I would say a few years where the traditional Security Operations Center, you know, mostly they were the ones, you know, they were changing firewall rules. They were tuning IPS, IDS, you know, proxies, firewalls. They were kind of the people behind the technology, making sure it was up and running, ingesting it for the most part, or handing that off to separate teams. And where now we're seeing more of either a split and to where they're more of a cyber threat intelligence center, or that the SOC role is actually getting a split. Because I think that's one of the things that we've seen is, again, with all these new alerts, you start getting alert fatigue, so you have to make sure that what the analysts are seeing is proper and timely and actionable, because otherwise you've just got some very well-paid people sitting at a desk going through, you know, millions of alerts that are not getting them anywhere and is not doing anything to help protect the company. You know, and a lot of times it's you know, just going down the rabbit hole when you're not even looking for a rabbit at that point in time. So at Consumers, definitely we're in the process of a shift to splitting out the roles of the traditional SOC into the mindset of the Cyber Threat Intelligence Center. So no more are these people also responsible for the day-to-day care and feed of the tools. Their priority is ingesting the data and either making reports or doing something actionable to better help the security of the company. And I think one of the things that allows them to do is really focus on what their mission should be as an incident response team, you know, is really focusing on what information is out there, you know, either internally, externally, and what does this mean for my organization? You know, is this just commodity type malware that everyone's getting hit with, or is this something I really should be worried about because this is targeting my industry? I think there's been a lot of, I consider cyber threat intelligence the new APT buzzword when you come to vendors, because it's, you know, everybody sells cyber threat intelligence solutions. Fortunately, just like Bruce Schneier says, you know, security isn't a product, it's a process. The same goes for cyber threat intelligence. It's a process. Yes, you can use technology, you can use tools, you can use feeds to help support that. But for the most part, what people are getting is intelligence. They're getting data, not intelligence. So it's still up to the analyst to make a decision off that. One of the things that they're trying to do is really make partnerships and get better data. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of people look, I know this is probably bad coming from someone that works for state government, but a lot of people look for the government to kind of fix things or give them solutions. And it's been my opinion that the private sector is probably the best to determine what the solution should be. And I know there's a bill right now, the Cyber Information Sharing Act, a CISA that's been supposed to be voted on for, I think, about a year, and people start including different things in it. That's why we're at the standstill. But that type of bill, what that allows people to do is share the information with the government without the risk of any of that information being FOIA'd. Because obviously there's concerns where people start sharing information with the government, another company, you know, in their same industry could then, you know, put a FOIA request in to find out information of, you know, how that company really is vulnerable to get a competitive edge. So I think one of the things that consumers did is they joined some private partnerships with other utilities throughout the United States. So it was a great way for people to actually talk to one another, get to know one another, and build the trust. Because I don't think you can really have effective sharing without trust. Because what I've seen in the past is people just waiting for information and not really sharing it. So, I mean, that's a lose-lose right there. You know, if you're not willing to give information, you shouldn't be getting information. So these private partnerships were very valuable in knowing, hey, this is the type of attacks, you know, that are coming against electrical utilities. This is where I should be spending my time, not on the commodity malware that, you know, a financial institution or the healthcare is getting, because you truly have to know your enemy to know what you should be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And you touched on a couple different points that are interesting. Earlier, you're discussing creating that incident response plan, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically through the state, the new cyber disruption response plan. Some of the incident response plans I've seen have specifically put in contingencies to say, we will limit this amount of information, we will not grant business information, we will restrict as much as possible what we share for exactly the point you highlight. They don't want their competitor to do a Freedom of Information Act against them and then collect that data and get that competitive intel.
Right. And I think also, I mean, just, I think there's just in the past been a general mistrust of the government. I mean, you have like the things with the Mannings, the Snowdens, and you have the OPM breaches where people are like, hey, why should I share my information with you when it's fairly clear you cannot safeguard that information? So I think a lot of times people feel they feel better sharing it with a private industry. They think that they may have a better idea on how it should be safeguarded, which, you know, again, private industry, very much the same. You know, you can kind of go down, you know, defense contractors and such that have had breaches. So, right. I mean, breaches, you know, they're colorblind to that sense where they don't care who you are, where you're at, what you do. Everyone in this world, regardless of their industry or their occupation, has something that somebody else either wants or could use. I mean, if it's not information, if it's not money, it's just the actual, you know, your infrastructure, your resources to, you know, attack other people. So I think that's one thing that we've been also trying to do at the state is we've been having agency security briefings with all the agencies to kind of talk about, one, just cybersecurity in general, the services that my team provides for them, as well as roles and responsibilities. Because I think in a lot of cases, you know, when people think of cybersecurity or risk or anything to that effect, you know, they automatically point to their security department or their IT department when each person in an organization has their own role when it comes to information security, whether it's just following policies and procedures and standards, or if it's, you know, doing the security awareness training, or, you know, knowing what data they are stewards of and how they are protecting it.
I couldn't agree more. And one thing I was wondering was, in terms of sharing information, what role the Electricity Information Sharing and Analysis Center had, EISAC, when I was in the financial services industry, we relied pretty heavily on FS, Isaac. But
correct.
Again, it was, the data was very high level.
It is, and I think, again, I came from the financial sector as well, and I can say that definitely the FS-ISAC is probably the most mature ISAC out there as far as capabilities. I mean, they were the ones that came out with the Soltra Edge, kind of let the whole Styx taxi revolution and made that available to the public for consumption. And I think that was definitely a great idea because information is great, but if my information comes via email in several different formats that my tools cannot process, you know, it doesn't do me that great. So obviously having a standard like Styx and Taxi where it's, you know, machine to machine, you know, automated threat intelligence is great. ESISAC, I think, again, very similar circumstances to the FS-ISAC. But again, I think what came out of, for me in both times with the FS-ISAC and the EISAC is the relationships I built. Knowing to, you know, who's on the end of the phone, you know, who is this person, making a point to either go to the conferences, the briefings they had to get to know the people. Because again, building that relationship, you know, I don't have to rely upon the ISACs to send me that information. If I already have that relationship and I have trust built that I know that, hey, I've got these eight banks or I've got these four utilities that, you know, I've got my own little cyber threat intelligence sharing committee that I can count on for one, for them, if I send them anything to safeguard it, as well as when they see something, they're going to let me know.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about building those relationships and building those teams and having the ability to not only see the information, but prepare, practice. And that gets me onto something else that you're involved with. Actually, we're both involved with, right? Which is the Michigan Cyber Civilian Corps.
Yes, that is a great volunteer organization, very much akin to volunteer firefighters, but it's for cyber threats. So it's basically volunteer incident responders, if you would. And this has been going around for over a year now. It was part of Governor's Snyder's initiatives to kind of really ramp up cybersecurity for the state of Michigan. It's been going very well. I've recently taken, more of an active leadership in that, to get things more operational. And honestly, I think in many cases, we kind of put the cart before the horse, so to speak. And we had, you know, we had teams created. We had all of these exercises we were doing, these red team, blue team, capture the flags. You know, we were doing it with different countries. But then when it came down to it, there was a lack of communication and a lack of, I guess just really information sharing as far as, you know, okay, I joined this organization. I kind of have an idea why I did it and what they're for, but, you know, what am I really getting myself into, you know? And so one of the things we've done just in the past month is we've released a charter that kind of goes over a lot of high-level information that I've sent out to all the Cyber Civilian Corps members, and actually at the International Cybersecurity Summit that the governor is holding on October 26th at Kobo, I'm having a luncheon for all the Cyber Corps members, and we're going to discuss the charter and kind of talk about what everyone's ideas are, if they have any changes. But again, just to have a nice information sharing session where we can say, this is what the Corps is supposed to be doing. This is what we're going to be doing. In the next 90 days, you know, we're going to have the charter developed. We're going to have a governance committee to kind of run the Cyber Corps, because what I don't want it to be seen as either a state-led thing where the actual volunteer members don't have a say in how it's run, because this really is a volunteer-run organization. Biggest questions I've been asked is, you know, okay, I'm part of the Michigan Cyber Civilian Corps. You know, if Bigby gets a breach, am I going to be deployed? You know, what is the role? And one of the things that kind of connects to the Cyber Civilian Corps with the Cyber Disruption Response Plan is that in its current incarnation, the Michigan Cyber Civilian Corps can only be activated during a governor-declared state of emergency. So that kind of clears up, you know, it won't be just random, you know, at any point in time. I mean, it's got to be a pretty high-level cyber event to have the Corps involved. One of the reasons is at the time of their deployment, the Corps members actually become contractors for the state so that the state can insure them and indemnify them. So that's one of the reasons that it was put at such a high level, was more to make sure that everyone would be covered and held harmless for anything that could happen during that event.
Yeah, and it's a great asset to the state, even in its current incarnation, right? And you touched on some of the limitations of the first go-round.
Mm-hmm.
But I joined one of the early teams, and the ability to do the red team, blue team, you know, the offense, defense exercises,
yeah.
The capture the flags have been very helpful in training up. Made some good relationships, and I was excited to see you take on and start writing this new charter, because I think this past year we've kind of, you know, worked around, built our skills a little bit, and then began to say, okay, now that we are this volunteer firefighting team, how do we get called, and, you know, how do we use these skills?
Right. At least, I guess the best way to describe that is, at least with a volunteer firefighter, you know, if there was a fire, you're going to be called to it. With the Cyber Civilian Corps, I don't think it was that clear as far as, you know, hey, is it, what incidents are they? But you do bring up a good point of the different exercises that are available to those that are part of the Cyber Civilian Corps. And like I said, we normally do at least four a year, red, blue team. We've got the individual capture the flag exercises, as well as there is free training available to those who are members as well through the Michigan Cyber Range. So there's topics of, you know, incident response, computer forensics, you know, just some general security classes. And one of the things that we I'm actually going to be changing is the way the process is right now is to volunteer. You can go to micybercorps.org, and there's basically four assessments you have to take. I think they wanted to kind of vet the people out. So basically, there's a couple tests on computer forensics, there's a couple tests on incident response, and determining how well you do, you're either, you know, the senior forensic or senior IR guy, or you're the junior level IR forensic guide. And one thing I'm trying to make a change is I want people that have a passion for information security. If they can't pass these exams, that's fine. You know, like I said, we've got free training that's available to them, so let's use it. Let's get the people that have the passion that want to do this, and I'll take that any day over the people with certifications. You know, I really feel like, you know, we can help them pursue the knowledge they want, but it's still allowing them the opportunity, because, again, it's a volunteer organization. We shouldn't be turning people down.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm very glad to hear that one as well, because we've got some fantastic talent coming up in the local community that wants to participate. And you're right. They just need a little bit of training, a little bit of molding to get them there.
Correct. And I think that'll be a great way to get a new stream of people. And again, just it's about their relationship building. I mean, I know you've been, and myself, you know, the Michigan security community is pretty small, but it's great. I mean, things that you're doing with the MISEC, I mean, those are just great community kind of driven things that are a way for people to, you know, same focus, same minded people that want to get together and just talk about security in a very, you know, low key way that doesn't make them think, you know, they're just at another meeting.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Train them up, make good contacts, make good relationships, learn from one another.
Yeah, it's all it is. I mean, security community is small. You know, you never know where your next job may be. So build those relationships up.
That is true, too. That is absolutely true, too. Well, Christian, thank you for joining us. We're just about out of time. So, again, this has been Christian Kopassi, the Chief Security Officer and Deputy Director for State of Michigan. And, Christian, you mentioned there's an upcoming summit, right? What was that again?
Correct. The 2015 International Cybersecurity Summit is taking place Monday, October 26th at Cobo in Detroit. And if they go to michigan.gov/cybersecurity, there's information on the summit and how they can sign up.
Fantastic. Are they going to that same website to find out about the cyber disruption plan as well?
That is on there as well. And I will be there'll be electronic copies available for the summit attendees as well. And I'll be having a hard copy with me for the Cyber Corps members as well, so we can take a look at that as well.
Fantastic. Well, it should be a good summit. I hope the listeners can come on out and join that. I was able to go last year. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go this year. Dang it. It's quite a good event to have in our downtown Detroit.
Definitely. We got a lot of good speakers this year. I'm very happy to be a member of it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, thank you for listening. This has been episode one of Encode Decode. Stay tuned. We will continue to bring you some of the cutting edge, leading edge security leaders and practitioners throughout the region as we talk about ways that we are defending our organizations, ways that we are keeping the criminal element out, and ways that we're enabling business through IT security practices. This has been Wolf Gorlick. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us on the Encode Decode podcast, brought to you by CBI, IT Risk Management.